How many of us have had teachers or moments like the young girl in the poem Francie read? I'm okay without the light. I know it's very buzzy. How many of us have had teachers like that? Or moments? A moment of not being recognized as someone with a valid idea or creativity of our own. A time when being who you are was not good enough. A moment when you realized your best endeavors were deemed not worthy. I know I had a teacher who did not want to recognize my eagerness to learn or my ideas. It was a painful moment of feeling not good enough to be recognized. I was put down merely for wanting to participate in the class discussion. The poem was written in 1967. Is it outdated? Wow, wouldn't that be nice? Hopefully we are more inclined to recognize individuals of whatever age, of whatever color, for their experience. Hopefully children are not put down for who they are, but I cannot imagine that it never happens. But part of this change in attitude is due to our Unitarian forebearer, Sophia Lyon Foss. Foss was a religious educator all her life, active for 80 years in religious education at quite a variety of levels. She taught at several different churches for a while at anyone that would take her, at an experimental Sunday school at Columbia University, and was on the faculty of Union Theological Seminary for years. She was one of the first female faculty. We have been focusing on pivotal Unitarian and Universalist theologians for the past couple of months. We learned about the Universalism of Hosea Ballou from the late 1700s. Remember, he believed that we are all good enough to go to heaven, and that would make us happy. We heard about William Ellery Channing, who in 1819 was brave enough to lay out just exactly who Unitarians were, setting off a firestorm of controversy, which he knew would happen. That was when Unitarians separated from our Congregationalist and Puritan roots. Today, I want to focus on a woman who was a creator of American Unitarian religious education as a modern theological science of human emotions. She was hired in 1937 at the age of 61. In the next 14 years, she edited or co-authored the New Beacon series, more than a dozen books of curricula. They addressed children directly, using vivid stories from around the world. Drawing on anthropological and psychological research, the children's books were dedicated to one goal. We wish children to come to know God directly through original approaches of their own to the universe. This child-centered approach appealed to many young baby boom parents, and the curriculum's popularity in the fellowships that sprang up across the continent was a leading factor in Unitarianism's post-war popularity. Just who was Sophia Lyon Foss? She was born in China in 1876, the child of Presbyterian ministries, and she graduated from Worcester College, Worcester, Ohio, dedicated to a career in missionary work. She had signed a pledge card from the student volunteer movement, reading, "It is my purpose in life, if God permit, to become a foreign missionary." The goal of this movement was the evangelization of the world in this generation. She never made it to the foreign mission fields, but it wasn't for lack of trying. She married a guy who was going to go there, but they didn't get there. After a couple of years of teaching Latin at high school, she returned to school herself, the University of Chicago. She wanted to know more before she entered the mission field. She was so sure of her traditional faith that the warnings she received about this university's new rational and radical approach to religious studies did not faze her. This was the higher criticism, learning about historical context. However, she was indeed open to new ideas about how to interpret biblical scriptures and the stories. One of her mentors there was John Dewey, a founding father of progressive education. She taught Sunday school there and continued her studies at both Columbia University and Union Theological Seminary in New York City. But she felt that she learned more from her five children than anywhere else. Obviously, she paid attention to them. Later in life, she would say, "The children who joined our family circle were not merely the object of my educational efforts. They were the most potent source of my own education. In a vital sense, the children were unwittingly my major teachers." In between bearing children, coping with their frequent illnesses, and the death of two of them, Sophia Foss was busy in her field. She took courses in writing, lectured at religious education conferences, taught Sunday school classes in an experimental Sunday school, taught church school leaders, and wrote articles after articles. As she hammered out her increasingly liberal theology and its implications for religious education, she found herself drawing less exclusively on the Judeo-Christian tradition and more on natural sciences, on the religion of primitive peoples, and on other world religions. She had discovered that primitive people developed their religious ideas as they reacted to the natural world around them. So she asked, what if today's children were allowed to express their responses to the primary phenomena, birth and death, sun and moon and stars, dreams, shadows, wind and rain? Should not the children's confrontations with and reflection on these realities be the beginning of their religious education? She thought that was better than Bible stories about people from long ago and far away. Not only did she suggest delaying children's exposure to the Bible until they were ready for history in general, but she suggested that children not be introduced to other people's idea of God until they had their own nascent understanding of God. Sophia Foss was experimenting with experience-centered religious education. In 1937, Foss was hired by the Unitarian Department of Religious Education. Her mission was to write new curricula, and she did so. She had books and articles to explain it to the teachers as well as parents. She fostered the writing of songs to accompany the curricula. She thought that the ideal Sunday school session would be 3 hours long, so that it would have long enough for arts and crafts and dance and drama and science experiments, too. Her teacher and parent guides gave examples and showed how to include all this stuff. Her materials were used by both the Unitarians and the Universalists. They were still separate organizations at that time. And by other groups, church, synagogue, and parent groups. Some congregations were more traditional and still wanted those Bible-centered story lessons. So she did provide those too. But she thought that focusing on the children's own experiences was a better way to go. In her 1926 Bachelor of Divinity thesis, she wrote, "Our fundamental position is that how to live a good life is a problem, not a precept, that religion and morals call for a creative striving and searching. Such a position prevents our going to the Bible or to any historical material to find an authoritative guide or to learn a divinely given law to be obeyed. We are thinking of the Bible as one source book among others, containing stories of the very real human experiences with some of these very vital problems which the child is facing today." If one had to decide whether the purpose of religious education was the transmission of the Christian heritage or the guidance of individuals in a process of creative growth, Foss chose growth, creative growth. She believed that teaching, quote, is an art, and that teachers' own claim to rank as an artist is measured by the teacher's ability to foster the attitude of the artist in those who study with them. It is the task of the teacher to arouse enthusiasm and to communicate these big ideas. if the interest dies in the student, then the topic is only a clouded memory. Of course, her way of teaching is much more mainstream now. I read about a prominent Alberta naturalist's method of teaching his 3-year-old daughter about confidence, competence, and consequences. I love this idea. I wish I'd had the opportunity. In his living room, he has set up a trapeze about 2 feet from the carpeted floor. Marie has apparently learned the hard way that when she leaves toys in the way, she will bump into them and that might hurt, and that the couches are great launching pads. Gad is a mountain climber and guide and has seen all kinds of people in situations where they have to weigh their competence for a task and the risk in attempting it. He is trying to teach Marie to gauge these things as she grows up, slowly, inch by inch. He gauges the risks to be involved to be quite low and the benefit to be quite high. Gad loves to watch visiting children and their parents. How do they approach this less than conventional entertainment? Does mom spot her daughter or warn her away? You're going to knock your eye out. Does the child watch for a while or jump in without giving consequences any thought? Gad is most interested in the underconfident child, the one who has the strength of competence, but not the attitude of, let's try this. Often Gad says the parent is the one who has cautioned all too often against taking even small risks. He sees it too often in his work of guiding climbers, those who do not know how to gauge the risk in front of them or their own competence. So they make inappropriate decisions about their own lives, maybe too risky, maybe too cautious. Gad wants his daughter to make her way in life in a confident but calculated way. Marie now has a set of rings in addition to the trapeze and is able already by the writing of this, time of the writing of this, she's able to hang upside down by her hands and knees already. Hanging only by her knees is her what she's working toward, the challenge at hand. She is learning right from her own experience. Experience was the basis for all of Fa's work and for her theology. Fa's devoted her life to the big questions rather than the big answers. As she put it, although beliefs are important, we need to remind ourselves that they are the fruits of experience and that in the natural world, each life begins with its own seed. As parents of children, and as educators, we need to practice looking beneath the convictions to find those earlier experiences that awakened the questions, which in turn called forth the answers given as convictions. At the age of 82, Sophia Lyne Fawes was ordained at the Unitarian Church in the U.S. with the largest enrollment of children. And contrary to the usual procedure, she preached her own ordination sermon. And she expressed the hope that ministers would learn not only to be theologians, but also religious educators, that they would know and employ the latest findings in psychology and the natural sciences. She wished that children would have more time to explore the natural world around them, to learn from their own experience. Fawes would be happy to see that the first source of our living tradition that is listed in our principles, it's just before page number 1 in the hymnal, she would be happy to see that that first source is, quote, our own direct experience of the transcending mystery and wonder which moves us to a renewal of the spirit. Her theology of religious naturalism infuses so much of our Unitarian way of being, we hardly notice it. She said in 1965, life in this age of emphasis upon the sciences encourages and even requires a broadening of the realm of human religious and ethical responsibility until it includes our relations to all forms of reality. This changed philosophy is developing in our time, she says, and that may help us to become more integrated persons again. is not only a realistic humanism, it is also a realistic naturalism of each person's being a part of a universal living unity. May our religious learning be as exciting and engaging as 3-year-old Marie's experience learning to use her trapeze. Amen.